It is Thursday, October 18th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of the Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering a blend of local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. More information is available online at nwaonline.com.
And support for KUAF is also provided by Eureka Springs, the Victorian Mountain Village, featuring various shops, galleries, tours, clubs, spas, and massage. Outdoor activities include horseback riding, canoeing, hiking, and more. Information regarding activities and attractions, plus a vacation planner, events calendar, and newsletter registration, available on the web at eurekasprings.org.
Ahead on Ozarks at Large, how a patch of land in northwest Arkansas is taking a step back into time to be what it once was. Plus, Joe Pitts is bringing a brand of blues to a local club and the Bentonville Public Library this weekend.
But first, the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is pushing ahead with overdue renovation work. The organization is the oldest operating art center in the area, and Administrative Director Kathy Blundell says it's been nearly 20 years since the center's last renovation. She says every corner of the center is being transformed in one way or another.
As soon as we can open our doors, people are going to get to see this first part of the renovation absolutely done, and they will, I think, be absolutely surprised, and we'll have a very fresh new face. Everything's being repainted. We have new flooring going in. We have new theater seating and draperies and some new lighting and sound equipment that we'll be in a little bit, too. And we have new restroom areas, foyer. Everything we've got is being touched. So it will be a very sparkling, very contemporary look for us now.
But even though the construction is taking place through the majority of the building, the show must go on as the Art Center is in the midst of its 46th season.
We're just not at a place where it's easy to say, ooh, we stop here and we're closed for a week or two. So offices have been open. The gallery is closed right now, and we are just waiting day by day to hang the next 5x5 exhibition. By Friday, it should be up and running. And we've been in rehearsal with the show that will sort of open all of this first-time look with next weekend, which is called Later Life. They're still rehearsing in the theater amongst the boxes and the carpeting remnants and all sorts of things like that.
Blundell says the interior spaces will likely be about 90% complete by the time Later Life opens next Friday. After that, changes to the building's exterior are expected to begin by the start of November. Blundell says that the ACO has been around since before all of the other arts organizations in the area, and these renovations help ensure it will be around for the foreseeable future.
Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville will soon be offering students one more choice in its array of study areas. Earlier this week, the college announced that it will offer a funeral sciences program to its students. NWAC's Vice President for Learning, Ted Phillips, says that the program is being offered through a partnership with Arkansas State University in Mountain Home.
They got together with NWAC and Dr. Steve Gates, and they start talking about a partnership whereby Mountain Home would offer, I guess, the experiential part of the program, and we could offer some of the general components to the program, thus expanding the breadth of the program into this part of the state. And so we arranged this partnership so that we would be doing these courses, which are primarily introductory type courses, via distance learning.
Phillips says that offering the program will require minimal adjustments to the college's course catalog.
These are primarily courses that we offer anyway. They're the general courses. There's a few that we'll be working on that are new, such as the history of funeral science and some courses that we're going to have to tailor. But other than that, many of the courses are already in our inventory that we teach every semester.
While students participating in the program will be able to get prerequisites out of the way at NWAC, ASU Mountain Home will reportedly provide the actual certification by the American Board of Funeral Service Education.
Like many other school districts in the area, the Rogers School District has seen its enrollment numbers increase this year. While enrollment has grown by between 150 and 200 students for the past 4 years, District Business Manager David Caldwell says that enrollment grew this year by more than 300 students. Caldwell says that the main driver in enrollment this year was a larger-than-usual kindergarten class. He says this year the kindergarten enrollment increased from a little over 1,100 last year to nearly 1,300 students as of October 1st.
Typically, you know, that kindergarten class, most of those kids stay with you throughout their career. So next year, if our kindergarten class is that high again, then those two classes will kind of ripple through and will keep sustained growth throughout the next few years.
He says that the new Jamie Darr Elementary School, named after the district superintendent, will be a welcome sight when it opens.
Looking at last year's numbers and in looking at in the community what was happening, we were getting close and we felt like we would be ready for a new elementary in the fall of 2013. So we started an elementary and we will be opening a new elementary in the fall of 2013. And that will certainly be sufficient for our numbers. And then we'll have to look at our growth next fall and see if we need to put on the board another elementary at that time.
Caldwell says that the district's current middle school capacity is adequate for the district's needs. However, with the district's two high schools nearing capacity, district officials are planning on opening a new tech high school. Caldwell says that officials hope to attract students from both existing high schools to the new, smaller school, which will feature a project-based learning model.
People looking to rent housing in the area should be on the lookout for a scam that has slowly made its way into the area. According to thecitywire.com, area realtors say that they have been caught in the middle of several scams that involve their real estate listings and scam artists using Craigslist to fool unsuspecting consumers. Agents from Crylike and Coldwell Banker Realtors in Northwest Arkansas say that to avoid being scammed, prospective renters should look out for warning signs such as being contacted by a supposed owner from out of state or country, being told to ignore a local real estate agency sign, or being asked to wire money for a deposit before signing a contract in person. In addition, renters are advised to avoid deals that are too good to be true and never assume that an email address validates one's actual identity.
Never assume that. Drought conditions in the state of Arkansas continued to improve over the past week. More precipitation and cooler temperatures helped ease the long-term dry conditions. According to new figures released this morning by the National Drought Mitigation Center, under 1% of the state is still under exceptional drought conditions, the worst drought classification used by the center. However, much of northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley still under extreme and severe drought classifications, meaning that the soil in those areas contains between 3 and 10% moisture.
Expect clear skies tonight with a low of 39 in northwest Arkansas, 45 in the Arkansas River Valley. Clear tomorrow with a high of 61 in northwest Arkansas, 66 in the River Valley. Tomorrow night, clear and 43 degrees. Walk the trail at Lake Fayetteville on a cloudy morning late last month. Maybe you heard the sounds of a chainsaw through the trees and brush. But good luck finding the source. About six or so volunteers have been asked by the park officials to leave no evidence of their entrance into the woods. David Chapman, one of the guys wielding a chainsaw, explains what the group is out here doing.
Well, I'm doing conservation work, I suppose, is the way to describe it. You know, we're trying to restore this in old prairie, which it used to be. And there's a lot of work needs to be done, cutting down invasive timbers and clearing and all this sort of thing. So we've been working on it for 3 or 4 years now.
The we Chapman is referring to is the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association, or FNHA, a nonprofit whose mission is to identify and protect Fayetteville's most important natural areas, as well as the community's tree canopy. Places like the Mount Sequoia Woods and this land, located inside a portion of the circular trail at Lake Fayetteville. This area was identified as upland prairie during the group's green infrastructure planning. One of FNHA's board members got together with the superintendent for the City of Fayetteville's Parks and Recreation Department to develop a plan to restore between 30 and 40 acres to natural prairie habitat. But what is a prairie?
Oh, well, it's grassland. It's ancient grassland. Not what we see when we drive around, I'm afraid. You know, these are the original prairie with lots of characteristic plants associated with it, and there's remnants of it here, and that's why this work's being done here. But in northwest Arkansas, there are very few places where you've got genuine prairie still left. Most of them have been ploughed or reseeded or treated with herbicides and this kind of thing, you know. So it's a fairly unique place here, especially being within the bounds of the city of Fayetteville and also close to Springdale. So
the group is out here chopping down cedar trees and black cherry trees, clearing the way for the city to use herbicides on one of the most invasive grasses, Lespedisa sericea, which looks like something a farmer might chew on. The city also uses controlled burns, they've had three so far, to clear the way for the native plants to resurface. Bob Koch, chairman of FNHA, says lack of fire is one of the major causes for the disappearing prairie.
This is what naturally happens when you don't have fire. You know, in the olden days, this area would burn every couple years, and that would restore the prairie and keep the invasives out. But when man came in here, he made sure that fire didn't happen. And so the invasives, like the cedar trees, started taking over. And we have aerial photographs from like 1940 on, showing that like in 1940 there weren't many cedar trees out here at all. But by 1999, the place was just covered with them.
Dwayne Walchin, FNH member and Workday organizer, points out some of the native prairie plants.
This one is Indian grass, and that's a native grass. And this one is switchgrass, which is also a native grass. And that's my two native grasses, and you see goldenrod, the plants that are beginning to show a little yellow in places and a lot in other places. And as we walk around through the seasons out here, we see all kinds of small patches of plants that are native. And by improving the habitat out here, those plants will spread from those vestige populations to become much more dominant. And
they have already been successful on one patch of land. Part of the hope is that as the native plants return, so will the animals. David Chapman, a poultry scientist by day, says you'll get prairie types of birds, meadowlarks, bobolinks, and certain sparrows.
I'm not an expert on anything else. I did see two very large rat snakes yesterday, and I actually even flushed a pair of horned owls from this grove of trees here. So it's the sort of place where horned owls would nest.
Dwayne Walchin says a lot of the animals that will return will be rodents, mice, and ground-burrowing animals. He also comments on what you won't see.
I was stopped one day by a couple of young ladies who were on the paved trail as we were coming out of the woods, and she was asking me what we were doing. I told her about it, and she says, "Oh, will buffalo be back?" I said, "No, I'm sorry. I don't think buffalo will be back." But that's the type of animal that would have been here. And also, there were eastern elk, which were habitants of this area. We don't expect to see those either, but quail, and particularly the birds, are going to enjoy a major comeback because of this diversity that they've got here now.
Bob Cox says that this is a project that will never be finished. They must maintain the prairie year after year. He does hope that within a couple of years, the city's environmental center, which is located nearby, can begin to bring students here.
To show them how the areas like this go into succession, going from prairies to savannas, then into the thick forest as you move back in. And so this has been developed with input from them so that they can use this as part of their educational program.
Also part of this plan is to work with the city to develop signs to place along the trails. Signs teaching of the natural history of this area, this particular restoration process, as well as the people history of this property. Last month, in order to foster enthusiasm and support, this project got a name, Callie's Prairie.
Mrs. Henson, Sarah Catherine Callie Greg Henson.
Callie grew up in the area, though her family fled during the Civil War.
When she came back to the area, is reputed to have said when she came back through this area that, "I love this area, I want to live here." And so 6 years later, Her family, or her husband, bought the land and they moved here and lived here. And actually, the family continued to own land in this area until about 1941? 1948. Just before the city bought the property to build the lake.
He says that whether or not she really said that, it sure sounds romantic. Also romantic is the success of Lake Fayetteville Park and Callie's Prairie. David Chapman confirms.
And I mean, this has been an unbelievably successful project here because when they opened the Hardtop Trail, I mean, hundreds of people use it. And so I talk about it as being the jewel of the park system. And, you know, there's a fine balance between giving the public what they want, you know, so they can walking around and everything like that, and also saving the natural habitat that's here.
If you'd like to help preserve that habitat, the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association is holding a volunteer work day this Saturday. To find out more, contact Audubon, Arkansas, or visit fayettevillenatural.org.
This week, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me welcomes the first female Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, on To Play Our Games. Yes, we're adding Ms. Pelosi to our big binder of women. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for our three-ring circus. It's this week's News Quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, now on its new day at its new time, Saturday morning at 9 o'clock on KUAF 91.3 FM. You've heard of flash mobs, the synchronized acts of art, dance, or satire that have been around for about 10 years. This weekend, the latest twist on the social phenomenon will be on display at the Fayetteville Square. It's called the Hot Flash Mob. The concept was born through a conversation between writer and educator Jeanette DePatty, who lives in California, and Dr. Eve Agee, a writer and educator who lives in Fayetteville. The idea, to bring awareness to menopause and health. The first hot flash mob was held just last month, and already there have been hot flash mobs in Manhattan, San Francisco, and London. Eve Agee says the hot flash mobs are designed to counter the stigma associated with menopause.
Jeanette and I met at a conference in Philadelphia in February, and I was planning to do a free video series for women on menopause coming out in September, and we started talking about ways we could collaborate, and we dreamed this up just because there's so much negativity and fear-mongering in our society about perimenopause and menopause. And so we thought, what is a way to spread awareness and allow this to become a way women can embrace this and have fun? And so we dreamed up the Hot Flash Mob movement.
I want to ask you more about the movement in a moment. You mentioned that menopause is usually discussed as something to fear or dread. On television, on situation comedies, it's usually just this sort of punchline. It's treated not as the next step in life, but as some sort of joke.
Exactly. I think that's very, very common because there's a stigma around it. And so on TV and in other situations, it's become a joke. But, you know, I'm a medical anthropologist, and it was actually attitudes about menopause that got me interested in medical anthropology. When I was 19 and moved to West Africa, I found that menopause was celebrated and that women were really considered moving into this time of wisdom and increased creativity. And I was so enthralled by that. And I also found that where I was doing research, that women weren't having a lot of symptoms like a lot of women have in the West. So there weren't typically the hot flashes and other various problems. So I came back and did research on it starting in my 20s. And so it is, I think, often on TV kind of pushed off as a joke. But often in women's lives, a lot of women are really concerned. And there's a lot of negativity in our society. So this is a way with the hot flash mob movement that women can come together, celebrate, have fun. And of course, women, men, and children of all ages are welcome to come to the flash mobs.
Did you have any idea, though, when you're at this conference and you start kicking this idea around, of course, you have this nice little play on words, hot flash mob, that suddenly the UK, San Francisco, New York, I mean, it's global, it's international.
Yeah, we've been really excited about how it's caught on. We have women emailing us from all over the world who are really interested in this, and it's just been delightful. I think it's so many people have said, you know, it's great to find a way to really bring in this awareness and also have fun.
The fun part is it's a dance.
Exactly.
With steps.
Yes, yes. And very, very easy steps. We actually went over the choreography. Jeanette came here in July, and my co-founder, and we talked about how we want to really create the movement, how we want to create the dance. And we just kept on making it simpler and simpler so everybody can do it, no matter what your ability level is. And it's really fun. The Hot Flash Mob we did in New York, women were emailing me all week afterwards saying it was the most uplifting things they had done in ages.
How will it work Saturday? Everyone's invited, as you mentioned.
Exactly. We're going to have children there. We're going to have women there. We would love to have some men join in as well. And if you can arrive at the farmer's market by 9 or by 9:15 at the latest, we will do a quick rehearsal for everyone. You can also beforehand, if you want to, go to our website, which is www.thehotflashmob.com. And on it, you can click on the Learn the Moves tab. And you'll see a video with Jeanette DePatty, my co-founder. She's got one that just shows the dance all the way through and another that is an instructional video where you can learn the moves very easily. And so you can do that, or you can just show up, and at 9:15 we'll do a quick rehearsal, and then we'll do the flash mob, and we'll be on the southeast corner of the square.
Southeast corner for the directionally challenged, that is?
That will be right in front of the town center.
Okay.
However, instead of being in that plaza area, we're actually going to be on the street right on that corner of the square of the Fayetteville Farmers Market.
Often where there are the Humane Society will have some dogs.
Yes, and several of those wonderful people are hoping to join in. So there may be some dogs actually in this flash mob for the first time.
You mentioned that you want to raise awareness. What kind of awareness do you want to raise about menopause?
Well, we've got, you know, a few different levels of our message. One thing is that menopause is not an ending, that it's actually a new beginning, and it's a time for women to tap in to the changes and embrace the changes that they're going through. And so this is a time really for women to connect with their wisdom, to look at what do I want to do with the rest of my life? How do I want to make it the best it can be? Also, it is a time really of deep creativity, and you know, we've seen that throughout our society. A lot of women get into art and other things during this time of life. You know, it's a time when a lot of women are freed up that maybe they had spent a lot of years with taking care of children and whatnot. So it's really a time for women to focus on themselves and find out what they want. And then the other thing is there are a lot of people in our society that think menopause happens much later in life. However, menopause, once someone actually goes through it, the average age is 51. Mm. But perimenopause is a period for a lot of women, from 5 to 13 years that occurs before menopause, that happens for a lot of women in their early to mid-40s, that they enter into this. And because there's this idea that menopause is something that happens to much older people, a lot of women in their 40s have no idea what's going on with them. So that's the kind of awareness we want to raise, to say, hey, this is something that actually for a lot of people, you may embark on it in your 40s. And to know what's going on, because I have spoken to hundreds, if not thousands, of women who've told me, I think I'm going crazy, mm-hmm. because they don't know what's happening. Because in the West, women tend to have a lot of symptoms during perimenopause. And so we just want to let women know, hey, this is something that happens. It's a great time to educate yourself. And also, there are natural risk-free things you can do to help yourself feel better. One of which is stress reduction, which we focus on in the Hot Flash Mob. It's a lot of fun. You'll laugh. You'll create a better mindset. And another is exercise, which actually helps balance hormones. And we're doing that with the Flash Mob, with the dancing.
And again, the website is?
www.thehotflashmob.com.
All right. Saturday, try to be there around 9. The whole thing's going to happen at 9:30.
Exactly.
Rehearsal at 9:15.
9:15.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you, Eve.
Thank you so much.
Eve Agee lives in Fayetteville. She's a writer and educator. She's the author of the book, The Uterine Health Companion, a holistic guide to lifelong wellness. And she's also the co-founder of the Hot Flash Mob with Jeanette DePatty. For more information, hotflashmob.com. It is Thursday, October 18th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
If you try to find me at the office later this afternoon, I plan to have disappeared if I can sneak out, because it's Crafts Fair weekend.
War Eagle?
War Eagle. Spanker Creek. There's actually three shows at War Eagle. There's a show at the Mall in Rogers. There's a show at the Convention Center in Springdale.
Aren't there all sorts?
Bella Vista.
Aren't there some indoor? Most are outdoor.
Indoor, outdoor.
There are maps.
You probably
have a map in What's Up.
We actually have a list in What's Up. Okay. It'll help you get there.
Yeah, she does.
Or you can just follow me.
Do you do the craft fair?
My family does.
You went to the Prairie Grove.
I did.
Not telephone. Clothesline.
Clothesline,
right. Clothesline fair. Right.
Telephone line fair. Yeah. Maybe we change it.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you don't want to do that, there's a nationally known comic, Ali Wong, at the Arkansas Union Ballroom at 8 o'clock tonight.
Correct.
And it is free. Mm-hmm. And a show called Kyle's Posse.
Those shows that are on the university campus, students
get in first.
Free.
Okay, get in first, and if...
And if there's room. It's free to students. It's free to the public if there's room.
Right, which is the way it should be.
Because
it's student fees that help bring these people in.
Exactly.
Okay, just wanted to clear that up.
But you can get in if there's room for you.
Okay.
And there's a show tonight at the Arkansas Music Pavilion. It used to be called Day Glow. Now it's called Life in Color. Mm-hmm. The world's largest paint party. It started in 2006 on college campuses in Florida. They have DJs, electronica music, dance, and they paint you.
So are people running around throwing paint? I mean, people that work for Dayglow are running around throwing paint
at you. This is what I assume. I think it's like Guar, but cleaner.
Okay.
This is 2 days in a row you've tried to get us to go to concerts where we get...
Get dirty.
Yeah.
Okay. So you went to Harvest Music Festival, and you can't tell me you didn't get dirty there.
Well, yeah.
Okay. So I win. 7 o'clock tonight, Arkansas Music Pavilion. Tickets are $42. Wear a white shirt.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. Get ready, Northwest Arkansas. The Central Arkansans are coming. For a day or two anyway. The Little Rock-based Historic Preservation Alliance of Arkansas is bringing its 2012 Fall Historic Ramble to Bentonville, Montanay, and Fayetteville on November 9th and 10th. It's a field trip that departs from Little Rock and will include tours of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art and an architectural tour of mid-century homes in Fayetteville. Vanessa McEwen is the executive director of the Historic Preservation Alliance of Arkansas.
The term ramble was, I think, pioneered by the Georgia Trust for Historic Preservation, which is kind of our counterpart in Georgia. And they started doing these fun bus tours to different parts of the state. And I guess we borrowed the idea starting probably about 20 years ago. And have done them off and on, looking at different themes and different locations around the state. But they're always focused on historic sites that we feel are gems in our state, and that we want to be able to show off to people.
You know, if you say the name, obviously Ife Jones is known internationally. But when you think about John Williams and Warren C. Graves, mm-hmm. and people like that, there was really quite an explosion of well-respected architecture in this part of the world at that time.
Yeah, it's true. Fayetteville had such a great, grouping of people there that just happened to be in Fayetteville at that time, with John Williams, of course, being the founder of the architecture department, and then Ife Jones, Warren C. Graves, all coming up together, and Edward Earl Stone's involvement in Northwest Arkansas. The Durst House, which is one of the other properties on the Ramble, one of the mid-century modern houses, was commissioned by and built by David Durst, who was the chair of the University of Arkansas Art Department. In the 40s and the 60s, and of course a major force behind the concept of the U of A Art Center, which brings in Edward Earl Stone. So you can see it's really neat to see how all of those people were connected, and you know, this certainly wasn't happening in a vacuum, but there was a really seems like cohesive group of just bubbling with creativity. That I think is really exciting to be able to showcase, and it's something that Arkansans should really be proud of.
Now the tour starts with a piece of architecture that is about a year old. You start with something that's very, very new, very contemporary, Crystal Bridges.
Yeah, we're actually jumping around quite a bit as far as our dates of architecture, but we felt like as lovers of architecture, we couldn't go to Northwest Arkansas without going to Crystal Bridges. And there just happens to be an exhibit opening on the architect, and so we actually get a sneak peek or a VIP tour of that exhibit to talk about the architecture. So it is very focused on architecture, and we're, you know, of course we'll have some time to look at the art and the collection inside housed in that architecture, but wanted to be able to really highlight kind of this. The next landmarks, the next modern or architectural landmarks of Northwest Arkansas and of Arkansas.
Is there a purpose behind the ramble aside from just having people be able in one fell weekend swoop see some of the architectural gems of Northwest Arkansas?
It's really about, you know, building an appreciation for different types of historic sites. Many of us in Central Arkansas don't venture out that often to just go look for historic sites in Northwest Arkansas, and so it's a way to be able to I think get people from Central Arkansas out, but also to engage the population in North Arkansas. Since we are a Central Arkansas based, we. You know, have most of our membership is in Central Arkansas, and these types of events where we get to go out and see historic sites and engage with people throughout the state really helps. I think build an engaged membership and build an engaged group of preservationists around the state.
Where can people learn more?
People can learn more on our website, which is preservearkansas.org.
Vanessa McEwen is the Executive Director of Historic Preservation Alliance of Arkansas. The group's 2012 Fall Historic Ramble takes place in Northwest Arkansas on November 9th and 10th. You can be from Northwest Arkansas and take part. Again, to learn more, you can go to the website preservearkansas.org.
On the next Living on Earth, you may dislike and detest some of them, but they're vital and influential.
Insects are incredibly abundant and important organisms on the planet. We sometimes refer to them as the little organisms that rule the world.
I'm Steve Kerwood. Find out how insects help to create the different plants we depend on for food. That's next time on Living on Earth from PRI, Public Radio International.
Living on Earth, Sunday evening at 5 on KUAF, 91.3 FM. Joe Pitts is a well-respected musician. It's fair to say he's beloved by fans of the blues around Arkansas and the world. He's adapted a blues sound that, while honoring the legends of the genre, is still very much all his own. This weekend, Joe Pitts and his band will play a pair of 9 p.m. shows at Legacy Blues in Fayetteville, Friday and Saturday nights, as well as offer a workshop at the Bentonville Public Library Saturday afternoon, sponsored by the library and the Ozark Blues Society of Northwest Arkansas. This week, I reached Joe at his home south of Little Rock. He was born in Pine Bluff, not that far from the fertile blues ground of the Delta, but he says his first influences were the British rockers, who, in turn, had been influenced by the very artists from close to where Joe grew up.
My sister really got me into the blues when it got electrified in the late 60s with Cream and Roy Gallagher, and then, you know, Zeppelin and Hendrix, and, you know, all of those guys. And then the Allmans came around, and that's really when it kind of all came together for me.
What was it? How old were you when you first started playing the guitar?
I was 8 when I first picked it up, and I was watching, you know, back in those days we had the television variety shows, and it was some show, I don't know if it was Porter Wagoner and Dolly Parton or the Johnny Cash show or something, but I kept noticing that the guitar player had a guitar laid over in his lap and was playing it, and that intrigued me, and so I dabbled with that a little while, and then I figured out that he was actually playing slide. Mm-hmm. And so really I started playing slide guitar before I ever really learned how to pick a guitar.
The slide, that I've always been intimidated by the slide guitar. Is it a tough thing to pick up?
No, not really. If I can do it, anybody can. The thing about slide guitars is really frustrating because you're basically playing a fretless instrument. And to get the intonation right and the notes to come out takes a little bit of technique to get used to. But once you get that feel, I know it was for me, once I got that feel, then I could just take off and really start exploring all up and down the neck.
Was this self-exploration? Did you have lessons, or were you just there figuring it out as you went?
Well, really, in those days, you know, pretty much the only thing that we had at the music stores was a Mel Bay book, and nobody really taught you how to play slide guitar. So I really just kind of picked it up on my own and played with an old round handled butter knife, kind of the C. Dale Davis thing before, you know, I knew C. Dale Davis. And you know, my mom had it, and I was trying to play, I guess, some standard tuning, and then one night on one of the shows, they went around and they introduced the band, and when they introduced the guy that was playing the dobro, well, they introduced him, and he just strummed the chord, you know, open the guitar, and I heard the chord, and so I tuned and tuned until I found that chord, and come to find out it was a G chord.
Hmm.
So they were playing an open G tuning, and then from there, I just kind of picked it up from time to time, and then, like I said, my sister was a huge music lover, and my mother too. So I mean, I was really bombarded from an early age from Cream and Zeppelin and even to Miles and Train, and one end of the house to the other end, it was, you know, Chet Atkins and Merle Haggard and George Jones and all of those old country guys that my mom listened to. So I just kind of picked it up along the lines, and then, you know, getting to, you know, hearing Duane Allman for the first time, that really is what kind of did it in for me.
Do you ever listen to guys like Speedy West, some of those lap steel guys?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I even from time to time, if I'm cruising on the internet when I have a minute or something, you know, I'll even try and pull up some of the old stuff from the guys playing the Hawaiian lap steels.
Oh yeah,
you know, and just hearing new definitions of music. You know, sometimes I'll add that into a song somewhere, you know, because when I play, it's like I'm not thinking about playing, but when we're playing, in the context of the blues, I hear more horn lines and orchestration in my head than I do really a stringed instrument. So sometimes I play like that. Sometimes I just play the blues, you know. So I think being away from the blues when I'm not out touring with it really keeps me fresh when I come back to it, because I'm exploring all these other genres of music.
Well, you know, and even when you're inside the blues, I think of the CD, Ten Shades of Blue, you're still exploring as far as that genre will go, because you've got 10 cuts on there from 10 very different kinds of blues legends, and you're playing a different style, it seems like, on almost each of those 10 songs.
Yeah, and you know, that was the concept of it, is, you know, I'm influenced by music, basically. And I've always loved the blues, and you know, I listen to Muddy Waters and Son House and Big Bill Brunzy and, you know, all the old cats, you know, early on growing up. And then, you know, you have cats that are really just pushing it to the limit today, like Walter Trout and Eric Gales, and that influenced me too. So, you know, Ten Shades really was an album not really to be a cover record, but it was more to be a tribute to the blues, because there's so many different facets of the blues, and I like all of them. So, you know, if you're going to stick me into a record label or a record bin on the shelf, it may be kind of difficult to do, because, you know, from the Almonds and the Southern blues influence all the way to, you know, Son House and Robert Johnson. I dig it and always have. And so I can't stay just true to one thing.
I really like how you do Freedom From My Demons. That's just an outstanding version.
You know, yeah, that's a great song, and luckily I'm friends with Eric Gales and have known Eric for a long time, so I was honored to do that for the record.
I want to ask about your gear, because if you go to joepitts.com, you can find a link to the gear. And until a young jazz guitarist from New York was in our studio just last week, I didn't realize, and he plays a Gibson as well, I didn't realize how much difference a guitarist might make in choosing the amp. I thought an amp was an amp was an amp, but that's not the case, is it?
Not really, you know. I even though pretty much it doesn't matter what I play through, I still sound like me. And, you know, I'm really fortunate to be that way. Because no matter whether it's a fly-in gig and I have amps that I'm not even familiar with, or whether it's, you know, the full-on touring rig, you know, pretty much I can dial in what I sound like. But, yeah, there, you know, when I play a Les Paul, which I've always had a love for those guitars, and I've played them for a long time, and when I play that kind of guitar, I like to have an amp that's a little more mid-range heavy, because I think that brings out the voice of the guitar, where if I'm playing a 335 Gibson, well, I want a little cleaner sound, so something with a little more top end and bottom end, and not as much mid-range. So depending on the guitar, you can kind of adapt to the amp, but generally, you know, I'm very blessed that you know, I've played long enough, so it really doesn't matter what I play through. I still come out sounding like me.
You'll be playing a couple of shows at Legacy Blues, and you're also going to be at the Bentonville Library. What's going to happen there?
Yeah, you know, the Ozark Blues Society is sponsoring a workshop, a slide guitar workshop, where folks can come out. I think it's free to the public. They can come out, bring your guitar and your slide, and, you know, if I can help you you know, get over some of the obstacles with play and slide. That's what I like to do, and you know, I have no secrets. So, you know, if I can do it, anyone can. And so, I try to instill that in everybody. Just to, it's a little frustrating at times, but, you know, just stay with it, because if you'll work through that and get to the sweet spot. So, you know, and things that if I can help, then, you know, I like to help students and players of all age. So, and then there's a little performance thing that we'll be doing also with the band. And yeah, it's going to be a real good time. You know, the really good folks over at Ozark Blues Society there in Northwest Arkansas, man, they're some good folks, and they like to further the tradition of the blues. And, you know, I'm all about that.
Well, you'll be playing at Legacy Blues Friday and Saturday night at 9 o'clock. You'll be at the Bentonville Library Saturday afternoon at 2. People can learn much more about you at your webpage, which is joepitts.com. Joe, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, Kyle. It was a lot of fun, and we hope to see everybody up on the hill.
Joe Pitts and his band will appear 3 times in Northwest Arkansas this weekend. He'll play beginning at 9 each night, Friday and Saturday, at Legacy Blues in downtown Fayetteville, and also be at the Bentonville Public Library Saturday afternoon at 2. His webpage, joepitts.com. And Joe was kind enough to answer 3 more questions about the possibility of adding a didgeridoo to his music, the loss of liner notes as music becomes a digital commodity, and more. You can hear the latest installment of our web-exclusive series, 3 More Questions, right now at OzarksAtLarge.com.
On this week's Generic Blue Show, we have a warm-up to the fall fundraiser and a big thanks to those who have contributed in the past to help this microphone record blues musicians traveling through the area. That's Friday night at 9 o'clock. Take a listen. The Generic Blue Show. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us is Beth Bobbitt, who's Public Relations Manager at Walton Arts Center. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Jody Beznoska out of town. Yes. Beth has come in. And, boy, Jody took off when everything's happening at Walton Arts Center.
It was a great time to leave, I guess.
Tonight, Caravanserai.
Yes, we have two back-to-back 10x10 performances. Caravanserai is... it's an amazing project. They've been here all week in residence, so they've been performing at schools. They were at Bentonville earlier. They were at Fayetteville yesterday. They're having a blast. But it's this band out of Morocco, Mashid Bekis and the Ganawa Ensemble with Brahim Frigani. I think I've got all that correct.
You did. Yes.
But so the project is really about sort of breaking down barriers for, you know, these Muslim art forms. And this year, they focused on Morocco, and the traditional music in Morocco is Ganawa. So there's, you know, this oud virtuoso. They're in traditional garb. They just have a lot of fun on stage. They're dancing.
I've heard about this dancing.
Yes.
I haven't. Tell me about it.
The word that has been used to describe it is acrobatic. Is it there's stuff happening all over the place?
There's some flips. There's some hat twirling. There's a lot going on stage. And, you know, I was thinking about what really gets people's, you know, stereotypes and perceptions broken down. And it's having fun. Like when you're having fun and really enjoying yourself, your guard comes down and you can start to understand and start to accept, you know, what you're learning about. And I think that's important.
Most tickets are $10.
Yes, most tickets are $10. We've got our pre-show conversation with the artistic director and then our post-show party, so you can mingle and with the artist, and that's a lot of fun, too.
Then we're going to shift gears in 24 yes. hours' time.
Yes.
Really less than that by the time that Caravanserai is off stage. And by the time Tokyo String Quartet is on, it's maybe 20 hours.
I know. Our poor production team, they're just going to have to flip that place, like, very quick. But, yes, we've got Tokyo String Quartet here tomorrow. You know, they've been performing together for 43 years. This is their final tour, which is really special that they're coming here. So we're excited about that program.
You know what I love about 10x10, too, is not only the tickets are $10. Generally, you could still, on a whim, walk up an hour before the performance
sure.
and get a ticket.
Sure, yes. And we encourage people to do that. We know everybody's busy, and I often don't buy my tickets until right before the show. And so, yeah, that's the great thing about these series. There's always room. And you can learn, you know, again, we are going to have all four artists for the creative conversation. So that's going to be really different and unique.
For the Tokyo String
Quartet.
Another great thing about the 10x10
yes,
series.
Yes, I love learning, and then you know what to listen for, mm-hmm. you know, if you're not a classical music expert. And the program is really dynamic. We've got Haydn, who's, you know, classic, and then Kodály and Ravel, which is sort
right.
of the French Impressionist version of Monet and everybody's favorite piece. So it's exciting.
One of the really great things about the 10x10 crowds, and I saw this especially with Plena Libre, you have a percentage of people who can't believe this band is here.
Right.
And they've been waiting years, if not their life, to see them.
Right.
There were people with Puerto Rican flags and great pride
oh,
in this
isn't
music.
Isn't great?
And then the other percentage are people like me who've never heard these people
right.
and are hearing them for the first time.
Yes.
And you have this mingling. And I think the $10 ticket allows that to happen.
We call you a culture seeker. And there's
that's the nicest thing I've been called all morning.
There's lots of people that just stumble upon it and are curious. And yes, for $10, you can be curious. And if you don't like it, you can leave at intermission
yeah.
and no, you know, no harm. But we're guaranteeing that you will like it. It's new, it's different, it's refreshing. And I loved our 10x10 series. It's great.
Yeah, because you know tomorrow night there's some people who can't believe Tokyo String Quartet's in Fayetteville
right.
and people who go, hey,
never
10
heard
bucks?
Of them.
What the heck?
Might as well.
Right. Everyone, I think, has heard of Shrek.
Yes, yes.
Big green ogre, and he's on his way.
He's on his way, and he's got great timing. He's coming over the Halloween week. So we're doing some special things in the lobby and have some special deals on Halloween, which is that Wednesday. So we're doing a costume parade. We're doing trick-or-treating in the lobby. We've got a great deal for parents. Buy one ticket for themselves. They get a free child ticket. So it's a safe and fun way to spend your Halloween.
All right. Information about all of this?
WaltonArtsCenter.org.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Beth Bobbitt is Public Relations Manager at Walton Arts Center.
And speaking of being on stage, Saturday night, James McMurtry will be on stage.
At George's?
Yes. 9 o'clock show. Oh, by the way, speaking of when people go on, the Avett Brothers were scheduled to go on at 7:30 at the Amp, and they went on at 7:30.
They were.
That's the first time I've been to a rock show.
I was late. I came in the third song and couldn't believe that they were already on stage.
I was walking in through the gates at 7:30, and I heard the banjo, and my wife Laura said, well, that's got to be them. I said, no, not yet. It was. Yeah. Hats off to being prompt.
I know.
Okay. James McMurtry, scheduled to be on stage at 9 at George's Saturday night. We asked a question yesterday that involved populated cities in Texas.
Right.
Wanted you to send me at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com one of the top 10 populated cities in Texas that didn't have as many people as Fort Worth. Amarillo could have worked. El Paso could have worked. So from the winners, from the people who correctly identified at Texas City, we have a couple of winners to see James McMurtry.
We do.
First one is Janice Corey.
Congratulations, Janice.
I will email you and tell you how to get the tickets. And also from a handle of Go Lightly.
Go Lightly.
Yes. Let us know your full name, if at all possible, when you enter these contests. But I'll email both of you and let you know that you have a pair of tickets each to see James McMurtry Saturday night at George's.
Have fun.
150 years ago, thousands of Confederate soldiers from Texas and Arkansas gathered and established winter quarters at Camp Hope near the community of Austin in what is now Lone Oak County, including many led by Allison Nelson, a popular colonel from Texas. In the fall of 1862, an epidemic of typhoid, measles, mumps, and other diseases swept through Camp Hope, leaving thousands of soldiers stricken, including as many as 1,500 who died. Among them was Nelson, who died of typhoid on October 7, 1862, a few days after learning of his promotion to Brigadier General. The camp was renamed Camp Nelson, and around the turn of the 20th century, the remains of many of the disease victims were gathered and reburied at what is now Camp Nelson Confederate Cemetery in Cabot. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Prairie Grove.
Prairie Grove, a growing, but still relatively small.
Relatively small.
I like Prairie Grove a lot. KUAF's fall fundraiser begins Monday. Many of our listeners have already contributed to our goal, including George and Kathleen Paulson. Thanks to all who have contributed early. You can also contribute right now at KUAF.com.
And thank you.
Thank you very much. We both went to see the Avett Brothers.
We did Tuesday.
At the Amp. Great show.
It was a very good show.
Yes. Had a good time. Mm-hmm. Also, thanks to the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce for asking me to moderate the Fayetteville Mayoral Forum last night at the Chamber building in downtown Fayetteville. It was.
He said it went really well.
It was. Both candidates, even in disagreement, engaged in civil discourse. The questions from the audience were good questions, very respectful. I think people got a lot of information. It's kind of heartening to see that you can have political opponents and supporters of those opponents in the same room and actually have engaged in.
Everybody got along.
Yes. And so thanks again to the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce asking me to do that. And big doings across the street tomorrow.
Right. Larry Foley's film, Up in the Hills, premieres tomorrow.
Up Among the Hills.
Up Among the Hills, yes. Premieres tomorrow.
Now, that's sold out.
It is.
But there will be public showings at the library of this documentary in November.
Right. Free.
Free. Absolutely. So, it's going to be busy. They're closing the street between us and the library tomorrow. And for
the library's closed all day tomorrow.
Yeah, so, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
We're back together Sunday for Weekend Ozarks at Large. Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow for the next daily edition of Ozarks at Large.
Happy Thursday.